If you have a local business, event, or initiative that you would like to promote, CFRU can help you out. Free public service announcements are available to all not-for-profit events and organizations, while for-profits have the option to choose from an ad package that is competitively priced to give you the highest quality ad at the best deals available. A staff member will guide you through the entire process and ensure that you are pleased with the final result before it is put on air. If you are interested in having an ad or PSA run on our station, please contact outreach at cfru.ca for more information.
Tune in to Planet Groove for Funky Fridays on CFRU from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. with your Funky Funky Blues Doctor for a stir fry of funk, rock, blues, metal, and more. That's 10 a.m. every Friday on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
The Guelph Wellington Sex Workers Action Group engages community organizations, public agencies, and individuals with lived experience in a collaborative effort to improve the systems and conditions that marginalize sex workers in Guelph and Wellington County. SWAG works in solidarity with individuals working in sex work towards our vision of a healthier, safer, respected, and better world. Also, please join us Thursday, December 17th between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. in St. George's Square for our event in support of International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers. You can find us by the red umbrellas ready to greet you with smiles, resources, and swag bags. For more information or to learn how to become involved, check us out on Facebook under Sex Workers Action Group Guelph or contact Sarah Wilmer, Women Community Development Coordinator at 519-763-2255 extension 161. Sex Workers Action Group looks forward to collaborating with you.
Hi, this is Kevin Bright and the Upper York Mandolin Orchestra, and you're listening to CFRU 93.3 in Guelph.
Well, that was devourment. Something called Plastic Eruption from a lovely CD called Conceived in Sewage. Nice, eh? Killed Decapitation before that with the track Circo Inhumanitas. That's from the Anthropocene Extinction CD. Previous to that, two from Skinless, from their new Only the Ruthless Remain. I play for you Barbaric Proclivity and Funeral Curse. Before that was Cataclysm with The Black Sheep. That's from their new album of Ghosts and Gods. From Niles' new album, What Should Not Be Unearthed, I play for you a track called In the Name of Amun. And before that, I started the set off with some Hate Eternal and Distigian Deep. I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. It's been a blast, as you can tell. Kevin's not here for Cyber Stallions of Flaming Steel, because he's busy. I'm going to leave you with some Stormcast from the album Frame of Mind. This is something called Withdrawn. This has been Dean. This has been Forever Deaf. Thanks for listening. Take care of each other. Oh, and one more thing. I should announce this concert coming up on tomorrow at Elements. There's some good cover bands happening. I urge you to go check it out. Appearing are going to be three bands, or all cover bands. There's a Slipknot cover band called Not Slip. There's an AC/DC cover band, and also our favorite band with Josh Hanf, the Tool band, of course, called Third Eye Open. And I'm hoping to get to that show, but we'll see if time will tell. Again, thanks for listening. Stay cool, and see ya. We'll be right back.
Global Youth Network is a nonprofit grassroots organization that aims towards empowering youth through our trips abroad. Our trips are the least expensive way of traveling on campus and focus on bottom-up initiatives. Rather than going abroad with the intention of building something physical, like a school or a house or a well, we go abroad with the intention of building relationships with our contacts. In just a few months, you could be working with amazing people at a women's empowerment program in Kenya, on agricultural programs and a malaria clinic in a secluded area of northern India, or in a medical facility and school in rural Cambodia, all the while learning about healthcare, economics, culture, and education while developing your own skills and learning about yourself. All three of our trips run throughout the entire month of May and are very meaningful and sustainable opportunities. Please email gyninfo@uoguelph.ca to learn more.
Pour les francophones et francophiles de la région, CFRU diffuse l'Eclipse, l'émission musicale française à tous les vendredis de 9h à 10h le matin. Si vous faites partie d'une groupe ou une organisation francophone locale qui veut se faire distinguer ou bien vous voulez contribuer à notre programme, s'il vous plaît, me contactez, Sandra Doucette, par courriel francophone@cfru.ca. Soyez à l'écoute tous les vendredis de 9h à 10h pour les annonces, les événements, d'actualité et bien sûr la bonne musique française.
At ARCH, HIV/AIDS Resources and Community Health, we dream of a time and place where everyone is free to live healthy, stigma-free, vital lives. To achieve this vision, we provide programs, services, education, and support to people living with, affected by, and at risk of HIV and AIDS in Guelph, Wellington, Dufferin, Grey, and Bruce counties. In honor of the upcoming AIDS Awareness Week 2015, taking place between November 23rd and December 1st, ARCH presents Get Ready, Set, Knit, the Red Scarf Project, the AIDS Awareness Week launch and volunteer open house, the film and discussion of the film It's Not Over, update your HIV STI status, and World AIDS Day Vigil and Potluck. For more information and details about these events, check out archguelph.ca/events. On behalf of ARCH Guelph staff, volunteers, and the people served, we look forward to seeing you come out to honor and commemorate AIDS Awareness Week 2015.
Hey, my name's Andrew. I volunteer and have a show here at CFRU. Hopefully you can too.
Attention comrades of Canadian DIY communities and underground art scenes.
This is our house, Weird Distro, the first and only not-for-profit online store for Canadian-made cassettes, LPs, CDs, and objets d'art.
One stop, one package, one massive country.
Run by Weird Canada volunteers.
For music to hold in your hands and your hearts, check out Weird Distro at distro.weirdcanada.com.
If you like roots and blues,
acoustic blues,
old blues,
new blues,
folk blues,
electric blues,
even crazy blues,
tune in Monday nights
from 7 to 9 p.m. for
Blues Around the Block with Mr. Coffee
or me, Jaybird, on
CFRU 93.3 FM,
community radio for the University of Guelph. We'll be there.
Living on Less is a free 8-week workshop series focused on helping people to be more gentle on their wallets and on the environment. Each week, various expert speakers will present on a variety of topics, such as DIY eco-cleaning products, budgeting, homemade gift-giving, ways to save on energy around the home, and more. Each workshop features a hands-on element and is great for anyone who's struggling on a budget or is just interested in being more eco-friendly in their everyday lives. Workshops run every Thursday evening from 6:30 to 8:30 beginning October 22nd until December 10th at the North Riverside Community Center, located inside Waverly Drive Public School at 140 Waverly Drive, Guelph. Event is wheelchair accessible and childcare will be provided. All participants must register as space is limited. Email livingonlessguelph1@gmail.com to register and check out facebook.com/livingonlessguelph for a full list of workshops.
You're listening to CFRU
93.3 in Guelph, Ontario.
If you have a local business, event, or initiative that you would like to promote, CFRU can help you out. Free public service announcements are available to all not-for-profit events and organizations, while for-profits have the option to choose from an ad package that is competitively priced to give you the highest quality ad at the best deals available. A staff member will guide you through the entire process and ensure that you are pleased with the final result before it is put on air. If you are interested in having an ad or PSA run on our station, please contact outreach at cfru.ca for more information.
Aerobics. Gonna stretch your mind.
Your life.
Tuesday morning. Your life. 7 to 9. CFRU 93.3.
The Legal Clinic of Guelph and Wellington County will be starting our hours at the Student Help and Advocacy Center on the second floor of the University Center, a physically accessible location. The Legal Clinic of Guelph can advise you on landlord and tenancy laws. Consultations are free of charge, and we can advise you on whether your unit is protected under the Residential Tenancies Act, if the terms in your lease are legal, maintenance concerns, problems with your landlord, including the landlord interfering with your enjoyment of your unit or harassment, ending a tenancy, or how to assign or sublet a unit. We will be holding office hours from September 17th until December 3rd on Thursday afternoons from 1 to 4 p.m. You can also reach us at 519-821-2100 or through our website at www.gwlegalclinic.ca.
Hi, my name's Karen, and you're tuned into Guelph's volunteer-programmed campus and community radio station, CFRU 93.3 FM.
You know, I'm all up for the relations between North Korea and the West becoming better. So I wasn't there to make a propaganda film in any manner whatsoever.
So tell me what happened on then. We went with the full former NBA players.
This time, it was a harder experience because I was now a film crew. So I was protected more, I was controlled more than I had been before.
Lots of minders.
There was one incident where there was a load of kids sledging on a slope in Pyongyang. And I thought, oh, that's a nice bit of footage, actually, in North Korea. You know, it's probably not what you'd expect, loads of kids laughing and all the rest of it. Maybe you do. But anyway, I said, look, can we stop now? I want to film this. And they said, no, we'll take you to an island later on and we'll get a load of people down there and we'll set it up. And it's like, yeah, that's not what I'm after, really. So that became very, very frustrating. The sponsors are pulled out of the event.
Was that because of the international controversy?
Exactly. It all got too much. And that was all a bit tricky because the media got hold of that story. And a lot of the players were under pressure from their agents to actually not play in the game.
So what was the match like?
The match was an unbelievable spectacle to be in an arena with 25,000 North Koreans making, you know, an absolute racket, incredible atmosphere. Whether they wanted to be there or not, it was still interesting.
Now the players of Pepper team from DPR Korea and NBA Stars team from USA will enter the stadium.
And Kim Jong-un in the room. It's a totally and utterly unique event. So just from a life perspective, to have witnessed something like that was absolutely phenomenal.
And what was the quality of the basketball like?
The quality of the North Korean basketball was very, very good, actually. There was a few good players on the American side, but a few of them were a bit out of shape.
The US team gets things underway, trying to make the most of their superior height and reach, but their handling lets them down. The North Koreans' response? Speed. They keep the ball moving quickly. It helps to create the space for a series of three-point shots.
And did you actually film the match yourself, or did you have to use North Korean camera people?
We had three cameras, but they also had like a full outside broadcast setup, 10 cameras, cranes, everything. Because the match was going out that evening in North Korea.
So they gave you footage that they had shot of Kim Jong-un?
Precisely, yeah. That was one of the rules I'd agreed to. I was never allowed to point the camera at Kim Jong-un.
And did Dennis meet with Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, Dennis met Kim Jong-un. All the players met Kim Jong-un. Straight after the game, I was told he wants you and your team to come up to this new ski lodge he's got and we'll all hang out for the weekend. So that was potentially going to be very exciting.
So you went to Kim Jong-un's ski lodge?
Yes, I did.
What's it like?
Well, I'm not much of a skier, and it looked like a bit of a death trap to me, got to be honest with you. I don't know how much of a skier he is either. It's basically across towards the Gulf of Japan. If you were just plonked there, you wouldn't know you're in North Korea, apart from there's a few statues knocking about.
Was he there?
He didn't turn up. You know, I was told that we were going to potentially sit down with him and, you know, have a chat. I was really intrigued to find out why he wanted to have this basketball match.
What were your conclusions after all these experiences? Do you think that it was a worthwhile exercise?
I really, really do think it was a very good thing. I think anybody seeing Kim Jong-un having a laugh with this out-of-control 6'8" black guy, I think that sends out messages to the North Korean people that it's okay to be different, which, you know, obviously they've never been allowed to think like that.
How's the film turned out as far as you're concerned? I mean, if you had to sum up what kind of film you've made...
I went out there just trying to make a documentary about this basketball match. But at the point I went out there, I was only there to document the match. When all the uproar happened, when, you know, just as we're going out, Jang Sung-taek got taken out, when, you know, all the other sort of things happened along the way, and it ended up being probably a little bit more political than I wanted it to be.
I suppose some people might say that Dennis and you, to a certain extent, were quite naive, sort of blundering into this rather ruthless geopolitics, without quite knowing what you got yourself into.
Yeah, I could accept that. You on that, actually. When all these things happened, I started trying to... You know, I realised I had to understand the politics of why North Korea and America don't get on, which, you know, I had a reasonable idea, but I really had to be sure of my story.
Do you think that they were taking advantage of you in some way, trying to get their message out?
Yeah, I'm sure they were. I mean, I've never, that's the first time I've ever told that, but yes, I'm sure they were. Again, you know, watch a documentary. I'm sure I've told a very, very fair story, and I think I've given a very fair account of Dennis, what happened there. The regime is horrific, but there are other signs.
Yeah. His documentary is called Dennis Rodman's Big Bang in Pyongyang. Now, Stephen Kovacevic is among the most distinguished pianists of recent times. Born and raised in Los Angeles, and was a veteran concert performer by the age of 11. Throughout an illustrious international career, he's performed with the finest orchestras under many of the world's greatest conductors. Stephen has just marked his 75th birthday with two London recitals. The BBC's John Wilson met him at his home in the British capital.
Here I am, I'm sitting talking to Stephen Kovacevic, but... On the album sleeve, Stephen Bishop's name is there.
Yeah. I was born Kovacevic, and then my mother married a second time someone named Bishop, and one thing led to another, and de facto, though not legally, I started calling myself Bishop. And then that marriage hit the decks, and then I was this really clumsy name for a long time, Stephen Bishop Kovacevic, which is a ludicrous name. And then finally, when I joined EMI, I asked them if they'd help me to drop the Bishop, and they sportingly said yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that, you would have thought commercially they would be saying, look, that's the brand name now. Kovacevic is the name that people know. You're not changing that.
You know, I'm not Elvis Presley. I don't think they were planning to make that kind of money. I remember I sat on the, just after the presentation ceremony to announce that I was joining EMI, sat on the plane next to him coming back and just asked him. And he just very calmly said, sure, no problem. Before that, there was a American pop star called Stephen Bishop. And when I would play, he's from California, and when I would play concerts in California, I'd arrive at the hotel and there were all these groupies there. And then they'd weep when it turned out not to be their dream, but it was me.
You'd arrived in Britain at 18 to study with Myra Hare.
That's right.
What did she teach you? What did you learn from her?
I always played well, of course, but it was rather monochrome. Not much variety in the sound. And she had a magnificent sound and a sound of great variety. And it was that.
Mm. At the age of 32, you nearly gave up completely, though, didn't
yes.
you? Because you had a crisis of confidence, stage fright? How would you describe
it? Stage fright has always been a menace for me. Some years I win, some years I lose. It's better these days, but at an excruciating price. I have to prepare 10 times more than I ever used to.
So that's the case with the forthcoming 75th birthday concert?
Oh, yes.
You're not looking forward to
it? I am looking forward to it because it's very well prepared. I mean, I could play it tonight if I had to.
And can you describe the feeling? I mean, is it fear?
It'd be as if a mouse walked in the room. It's a completely physical, involuntary reaction. Hmm. Would you like a spider in on your hand? You wouldn't care. I would advise becoming a pianist then.
But when it's your life, when people have paid to hear you, when people love hearing you play, you can't overcome that sensation.
That really makes it worse. You just think you're going to disappoint them.
Wow.
Yeah.
No. And same in the recording studio as well, or is it totally different?
It's not totally different. If an orchestra's there, you know you can't miss something too often because they're paid by the... You know, you can't ask for another 10 minutes of orchestral time. So there is stress. And, of course, you don't want to play badly in front of an orchestra.
So you must have had times waiting to go on stage when you just thought, I cannot do this. And you have gone on stage and you've performed amazingly well. How did you overcome the fear?
Sometimes I can't answer you. I don't know. I remember a live broadcast of Bartók II, Edinburgh Festival, live broadcast. And I was so terrified I couldn't give the BBC a balance test. It's like not giving a balance test for the Rite of Spring. They had no choice. They had to accept it. I went on stage prepared with my speech to say, ladies and gentlemen, I'm terribly sorry. You know, and in fact, it went very well. And then I went ballistic and I really played well. How that happened, I have no idea.
But it's easier these days, though.
Yes.
You had some kind of help, some mechanisms to deal with it.
Sports psychology and... Yes, I mean, I've tried everything, and some of it is paying off. Mm.
You had a stroke a few years ago, didn't you? Which I mean, from what I read, you were performing again 3 days later.
Not three, with 2 weeks, it was weird. I had a stroke. In fact, it's lucky that I'm a musician, because I might not have known that I'd had a stroke, because I was here in this room practicing a piece, which I still play, so I won't mention it, but every time I come to that passage, I flutter a little bit. The passage goes, but I couldn't play the right notes. And so I went to a doctor and they said, pinched nerve. And so we had got a bit better, but it was fake better. Then I was on tour with the Rotterdam Phil in Holland, and something started to happen to the right hand, and then everybody got nervous. And then I came back and I had an operation. And then a day and a half or so after that, I had a proper stroke. I couldn't speak. And 2 weeks later, it wasn't great, but it was very good. I played the Emperor. And I couldn't even speak properly. But the physical coordination, though not A+, was from B+ to B-. And that was okay. And then it got better and better and better.
Wow.
And then I must have had, it happened in Bournemouth later. Though at the time, I didn't know. I had what they call a TIA, is it? People think they drank too much or they stayed up too late. And it's self-curing. But this meant I lost some coordination. That took about a year to get over. And during that time, I didn't think I was getting over it, except that one day I woke up and my mind was crystal clear. And touch wood, it's been like that since. So, but there you are.
To an extent, being a pianist is a lonely occupation, isn't it? I mean, you're here, we're in your practice room at home here with your Steinway next to us, and I presume there's many hours spent alone in this room.
Of course.
But so much of your work depends on collaborations as well, and of course, whether it's working with Colin Davis with the LSO over many years, Jacqueline Dupre, or Marta Argerich, you know, who you were married to.
But we have a daughter. We never married.
Oh, were you never married?
No.
Ah, right, I thought you were married.
Daughters can happen without that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
But that was a musical partnership and a personal partnership
of course,
as well.
And it's still strong.
And you're playing together at your birthday concert, aren't you?
That's right. And she's very generously coming. And it's for two charities. And one is a charity for SANE. It's a mental help society. The other is for a charity associated with my wife, who died, but I was with her before I ever met Marta. Mm-hmm. And Marta very happily came and took part in this to help in that charity as well. So it's very close family.
The pianist Stephen Kovacevic talking to the BBC's John Wilson. Well, time now for Witness. In the aftermath of the Second World War, before the creation of the State of Israel, tens of thousands of Jewish refugees tried to sail across the Mediterranean to reach what was then British-controlled Palestine. Many of them were survivors of the Nazi concentration camps. Mike Lanshin has been speaking to a British naval officer who was part of British attempts to stop them.
Another stage is reached in the tangled course of Palestine events. From the British ship Empire Rival, the first parties of illegal Jewish immigrants disembarked a landing craft. The immigrants are to be kept in camps pending a decision on their future.
Did you feel a lot of sympathy for the people who you were trying to stop getting into Palestine?
Yes, one's bound to. Because when you saw them, they were all in their tattered clothing, mostly still emaciated from the concentration camps, obviously very poor and no threat to anybody.
In 1946, less than a year after the end of the war in Europe, Alan Tyler was a 22-year-old officer on the British ship HMS Chevron. He'd served in some of the last sea battles of the war, but now in peacetime, he was being sent on a very different mission.
We were based in Malta, which was the headquarters of the Mediterranean Fleet, and we spent the summer months refitting the ship. And then, I think it was in August, and the captain said to me, our next job is to go to Haifa to intercept these immigrants. I know you're Jewish, presumably you have no objection of going there. I said, of course I would.
And so soon after, your boat set sail for Haifa.
That's correct. And we then took up our position with another destroyer, two of us operating up and down the Palestine coast just outside the 3-mile limit to intercept anybody once they came into the Palestine territorial waters.